The following program is sponsored by Linda's Construction. This is the WCCO Home Improvement Show, brought to you by Linda's Construction. One call, one contractor. Linda's Construction provides Minnesota and Wisconsin with the best products and workmanship. They provide leaf guard gutters, asphalt roofing, metal roofing, season guard replacement windows, exterior siding, remodeling, new construction, and more. If you've got questions, they've got answers this hour. Here's Denny Long and Andy Lindis.
And good morning. Andy taking the day off today. We have invited our friend Barry Strands back into the studio, and we're happy that he accepted, as a matter of fact.
It's my pleasure to be here, Denny, as always.
Good to see you, Barry. Barry's the guy that you know that if you ask him any kind of a home improvement question, I'm really putting you out on a
limb. Oh, sure. There. Great. Thanks. Raise the expectation.
he'll answer it. Easily. Wow.
I'm just older than most people who
do
this.
You know a lot of stuff, though.
Well, I have been having taught for such a long time, you end up asking or getting asked questions that force you to go do homework. And
that's right.
I think that's one of the things that's helped me just get smarter over the years. Plus, making mistakes, which is – I tell everybody out there the best way to learn is to take the risk of making a mistake, because that's another one that you'll never make again.
Yeah.
You will go, oh, nope, that one, not doing that again. I see the problem.
And that's where you learn, right?
It is where you learn. It's where you learn best. The problem, right, of course, is it's difficult to do that when someone's paying you not to make a mistake.
That's true.
That's the challenge.
All right. Barry, for those that don't know, you said teaching. I know that that's just one of the hats you wear.
Sure.
You've been in the construction business. How many years has it been?
Oh, my stars. We should count back.
Yeah.
1972. What is that?
Okay.
46 years.
Yeah.
It's weird to think that one human has some. I've seen companies that say in business for, you know, so many years, we have this many years of experience, but I've got 46 years by myself, you know. So I did a stint in college and started working when I was in high school, but still every year for all 46 years, I have been at least part time in the construction industry doing real construction work.
Yeah. And right now is no exception.
Correct. Currently, I work for a company called Kyle Hunt & Partners, and Kyle is a builder whose headquarters is in Minnetonka. We work all over the Twin Cities area, and we do higher end, and he always hates it when I say that because he's like, well, we'll tackle anything.
Yeah.
But mostly what we're doing is higher end new construction and renovation. We've just wrapped up a renovation on a home that was just under $2 million for the remodel.
For the remodel.
Yeah. And that's weird, except when you got everything inside the home, all the hardwood floor came out, all the trim, every place, remodel 5 or 6 interior rooms, add an addition 3 stories tall, you know, put in an in-floor heating system. Those kinds of things, they add up pretty quick. We replaced the roof. We repainted the entire house. It's going to function like a brand new home.
But and you get a chance to work around or with some really talented people.
It's an incredible opportunity to work with some of the very best in the business. And our company does not provide our own in-house labor. We hire subcontract vendors who are then responsible for their work. And so they're all professionals. And we hire the best of the best in order to get the best workmanship from them. And then we bid them so that they're competitively priced against other vendors at their quality level. And it's a great system for our homeowners. But it means that we get to do some really awesome stuff.
Well,
we just got involved with one where reclaimed lumber was part of the interior finish on a couple of the rooms.
That's
in the
kind
home.
Of a big deal these days.
And beams.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And these reclaimed beams came out of a barn in Wisconsin. And this stuff is expensive, Denny. But boy, is it gorgeous. And then juxtaposed against a natural stone fireplace and against newer finishes on the floors, obviously all new, but the look blends beautifully between really executed beautifully and yet still homey enough that you don't feel like you're walking into some kind of a show place where you can't actually take off your shoes and sit on your sofa and enjoy watching the, you know, football
still
game
comfortable.
Or something. Yeah. Yeah, it's a wonderful blend.
Now, when do you do the teaching end of your career?
Well, my teaching is a little strange, but in the education season for contractors, they have to have their hours in by the 31st of March every year. So typically, we begin classes to the end of late December, the holiday season, and then January, February, March, and that's my busiest season teaching. And then I do a couple of out-state things. I just booked a state convention in Nebraska and doing something in Kansas, you know, so I do a few things throughout the year in other states.
Now, what do you teach? I mean, and who
Well, anything for construction. I mean, having been in the business, I didn't realize that realtors, appraisers, they need education. And because the house really is what's driving their business lines, that's oftentimes an area where many people in that industry feel a little insecure about what they know. It's like, well, here's a bedroom, here's a bathroom. Yeah, but when you look at that, what do you need to know to be able to explain to a buyer what this might need for work or what condition it might be in? And the appraisers are always looking at condition, newness of the property, and functional obsolescence. And so as a result, they have to value a home on the basis of condition and quality. So they've got an entirely specific set of criteria that they have to use that then affects their square footage valuations and then the comparisons that they use for other properties. So they have that aspect. They need to understand construction issues. The problem that oftentimes comes in is stuff on the higher end gets built with better materials that get covered up and no one can see them. So, for example, if you're buying a pocket door at a home improvement center, a big box store, I don't care what brand it is, typically those are designed with a frame made out of pine and metal that are designed to go into a 3.5-inch 2x4 framed wall and then be covered with drywall. The problem with that as an assembly is it doesn't give much stiffness to the wall where the pocket door is being installed. Now, guys like me have made the mistake of trimming base moldings or casings using the standard nails that we use with an air gun and actually firing our gun nail into the door. And then, well, how come the door worked a few minutes ago? Now I've got base on it. Doesn't work. What's the problem? And, of course, as a typical male, my answer was, well, yank harder. And now I scratched the door because you put a nail into it. And that happens with professionals, too, but very, very rarely because we've learned. Now, our company, for example, says we won't put a pocket door in a 2x4 wall. We will frame this as a 2x6 wall. And because we can't have bowed 2x6s, that's lumber, typically pine or fir or spruce, are used on the wall framing materials, we only use a laminated veneer lumber, an LVL, or a Paralam style lumber. This material is like, it's actually not going to move. It's going to retain and hold its shape. It's really dense. There's a lot of glue in it. But they're super strong, super stiff, and that's how all of our pocket doors are framed. Now, once the drywall covers this, no one can see it. So the quality is hidden, but the price tag to build them the way that we do is over double if you were simply buying a frame someplace else and inserting that into a 2x4 wall. So in my mind, a lot of people, they understand that there's a price point. They go and they buy a vanity or they buy a sink or, you know, they buy hardwood flooring materials from a supplier, but they don't understand that there's nuances relative to even installation. I mean, we just did a steam shower, and that steam shower, you can't let any vapor migrate past that ceramic tile finished wall, or in this case, a stone finished wall, and into the wall cavity. That's got to be completely sealed against vapor migration. Otherwise, you'll risk rotting out everything behind that steam surface. And steam showers are becoming much more common in higher-end homes, and they have to have, for example, a sloped ceiling so that the water that condenses from the steam condensing on the surface drains and not lands on the steam showering person's head. So you have to slope a ceiling. All of those are details that a higher-end builder would naturally know because they've made those mistakes in the past and have learned this is how it needs to be done. But you walk into a home and you might not understand, oh, there's an extra $1,000 in the way this ceiling was framed. Oh, there's another $1,500 in the way this ceramic tile was installed over a vapor barrier material that won't create a problem for the framing behind it. Those kinds of hidden value upgrades are the kinds of things that anyone, a builder, for example, needs to explain so that a buyer can see it. Because we tend to have people think, oh, it's all about price.
Yeah.
Then we compare numbers, but we don't compare product and installation. And then it's very difficult for the non-discriminating buyer to understand the difference between quality, for example, a quality paint job and an average paint job. And those are the kinds of things that if you're discriminating, you know how it needs to look. Now, it doesn't mean we always get there, but that means I pay more for the better painter.
I never thought about this before.
It's a different way of seeing.
A whole different perspective.
It does. And it changes how we work and what we do. How we do it.
Yeah. Wow. I'll tell you what. I forgot to give the phone number and the text number.
Oh, sure. Why don't you do that so people can call? And by the way, I don't know everything, but man, I've learned a lot by making mistakes, and I can happily answer questions.
Well, let's give Barry Strands a chance here. Call in your question, your home improvement question, or send a text. Phone number, and we've cleared the lines, 651-989-9226, or send a text, 81807. It's our home improvement show presented every week by our friends at Lindis Construction. And welcome back to our home improvement show. Barry Strands filling in for Andy Lindis today. And if you have a question for Barry, call it in or text it in. We have one line that's open, and I suggest you fill it if you have a question. 651-989-9226. We're having a bunch, Barry, of text messages as well. That
Wonderful.
Number is 81807. Let's go to the phones. Terry is calling from Brooklyn Park. Terry, you're on CCO.
All right. Good morning. I was listening with interest on your comments about a steam shower.
Sure.
And I've been looking at putting in a steam shower and was looking at the self-contained units that they were selling over at Menards.
Sure.
And I was wondering what your viewpoint is on that, because those don't appear to have any self-venting or anything like that.
Right. The challenge is to make sure that you've got access to get some modification of air movements. I look at any system that doesn't provide the possibility for venting, and it's a little suspect to me, because you build up pressures inside a space. Now, the door typically is your access point to get air out of that space, but those will be fine. You know, they're going to give you the constraints of size, but they're certainly much better value than what we're putting in when we do everything custom. I don't think you have any problem with them, though.
All right.
Just make sure you have the adequate bath fan. And in fact, on a steam shower, I tell people you might want to run that bath fan off a humidistat. Now, if I say humidistat, do you know what I mean? I'm point blanking you, Danny.
Oh, to me.
Yeah,
with the level of humidity in the house or in that room.
Right. So it's a switch on the fan that operates on the humidity level. Mm-hmm. And if you use a humidistat to drive the fan, you'll be great.
All right.
Does it make sense?
Yeah, it certainly does. I hope that helped, Terry. Thank you. 651-989-9226. Patty is calling from Hanover. Patty, you're on with Barry.
I had a new cedar deck built about 2.5 months ago, and we were told to wait and let cedar dry out before we put a water repellent or something on it.
Sure.
And, of course, now that we're thinking about it, it's getting late in the year and it's rainy and so forth. What should I be doing with the deck, or should I just leave it until spring and power wash it and take it from there?
Well, it's my belief, based on everything that I've researched in this regard, that you need to let it dry, and you need to dry for at least 3 days. And better vendors that we use will put a moisture meter into the cedar to make sure that you've got a moisture content that's hovering around 12% or lower. And then I would still finish it this year. I'm trusting that we're going to have at least a week of dry weather. And if we can get that, your deck will be dry enough. The only question will be now, what are you putting on for a finished material? And if it's going to get into the wood as an oil-based material, I recommend those better than water-based, which will sit on the surface and then tend to flake and peel.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, most definitely. I think, too, even though it's only, 2.5 months old, that eventually to even put on a brightener conditioner.
Yeah, it depends on what we've done with colorants. And I agree with you that if we've gone to a colorant on the surface, we want to maintain that. Typically, if you use an Olympic stain, you can just recoat with Olympic stain. You'll drive that color back. It'll darken and deepen a little bit. But if you're in an area where you've got leaves and trees hanging over that surface, now you've got to be aware of topical molds that need to be addressed. And then a power wash, then a deck brightener, and then a repeat of color.
All right. Either way.
Sure. Yeah.
You got a nice deck there.
Yeah. So I think it makes sense to get it sooner rather than it go through a winter.
I think you're right. Yeah. Good luck, Patty. Thank you. Text number is 81807. Here's one that came in a bit ago, Barry. Texter says, I'm building a fish house. If walls are sprayed with foam, do I have to put plastic before paneling?
Well, we're presuming that the foam is a closed-celled polyurethane spray, and then the answer is no, because it functions as its own vapor retarder. If you're using an open-celled foam, then you need a vapor retarder on the warm in winter side, even if it's a fish house, if you don't want to drive water from the paneling back into the wall cavity. So you'd build it like a house to maintain its vapor consistency and keep the walls from rotting out, and it depends on the type of foam. Most people who spray foam use a closed-celled foam, and so the answer is no.
Okay, very good.
Qualified answer.
Qualified.
Right? Because, so I had a guy, and I told him he could use foam, and if he's used open cell foam, and he used to have a vapor retarder, he put a vapor retarder on it, and he sprayed it on the surface. It failed. He came to class and was like, "You're an idiot. I put on this thing like you told me, and it didn't work, and I had to rip my entire cedar roof off." And I said, "Well, I said, you needed a vapor retarder that was compatible." "Well, he told me it was compatible." I said, I don't feel particularly responsible, but because I told you I preferred closed-celled foam in that application. So anyway.
Well, regarding, the texter says, the example of the pocket door installation
sure.
you were mentioning.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cheaper to buy shorter nails for the baseboard?
Yeah, it would. It's the brain damage issue where you go, hey, I need to put a shorter nail in right now to install this piece. But to the point of the cheaper versus more expensive, how do you want the walls around the pocket door to be installed? Do you want the option of putting an electrical box into the pocket door location? Do you want to have any artwork hung on the wall on a pocket door surface? So if you want to do any of those things, to have only a 3/4 inch piece of pine on the inside surface to operate from just doesn't give you those options. An electrical outlet inside a pocket door cavity space and never worry about the door operation because we've taken the time to do a system that makes a little bit more sense to our homeowners' needs.
Hang on, Barry. We've got another half hour of the show to go. If you have any kind of a home improvement question, this is the guy you want to chat with. 651-989-9226. Call it in or send a text like a bunch of folks are doing. 81807. And good morning. Welcome back to our home improvement show. Andy Lind is taking the day off today. Our friend Barry Strands is back with us answering your questions by phone and by text. And I see one line is open if you want to fill it. 651-989-9226. Or if it's easier, send a text to Barry 81807. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Dan in Minnetonka is first on the phone here. Dan, go ahead. Barry's listening.
Yeah. Hey, isn't it funny how timing is? Just as I'm going on, I'm at the drive-thru at McDonald's.
Oh.
I know that feeling. I have vendor calls all the time. Well, it's like, I've been calling them all day, and the moment they call, I'm
course.
Like, I'm trying to order something here. Hello.
Well, Dan, do you want to finish? We'll put you on hold. Do you want to finish?
I'm good.
Okay.
I got my large hot chocolate with whole milk.
Thanks for sharing.
Would you pass the fries?
Barry, you and I had lunch at a contractor class, I don't know, 13, 15 years ago. It was a lot of fun with you. Gave classes through ProSource, and it was so fun to go through your classes. Well, I haven't been a general contractor since. I became a plumber, but I'm thinking about being a general contractor again. What would you recommend? And I know the insurance has gone so much higher
sure.
than it has back then. I think the annual premium was like $900 before things went nuts in the year 2000 or so.
Yeah, well, we still tell people to shop insurance. There's still options around based on the volume of the company that you expect and the total annual gross revenues. But the process hasn't changed. Once a person takes a test and passes the test, if they maintain their education, they can renew their license by restoring those hours that were lost and then maintaining insurance and bringing that back up and then resubmitting. But typically, if you've gone for 15 years, the wiser choice is to retest. And that
right.
process really hasn't changed. We tell people that if you want to pass a test the first time, you need to take a test preparatory class. However, the test is really today based on building code. And they actually give you the code book to take the test, and they give you Minnesota statutes and Minnesota rules relevant to the process. So every answer that you need is in a book in front of you. So
right.
you can take this test. The problem, of course, is finding those answers. And that's where the
yeah.
real challenge is, because sometimes answers are in footnotes, and if your book is 1,000 pages long when you go to take the test, if you haven't done your homework, you'll have a challenge. But once the test is taken, then it's just the submitting of the paperwork, and they'll do a background check on everybody, and then making sure you document your insurance, that's ready to go, and then
right.
you'll get your license from the state.
But there is no real training on how to be a general contractor, is
no,
there?
There's no coursework that says this is what a general contractor needs to do. We've been asked about those kinds of courses, and we're now offering a company called Professional Education Resources, ProEd, and ProEd Resources, ProEdResource.com, no S. proedresource.com, and I'm still teaching in the spring and loving it. But we have a class that basically is a first-year contractor designed to teach a contractor the kinds of things they need to know relative to all of the business side. But really the practical application of hiring a vendor, running bids. I get more questions about how to price stuff than anything else. How do I know how to charge for this? And that's something that there's all kinds of books out about that, and very few of them are as effective as personal experience.
Yeah, way to go, Barry. Thanks a lot.
It's good to hear your voice, Dan. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan, for the call. 651-989-9226. So we're going to get some text messages your way, Barry. Hang on. But Dennis in Woodbury is on the phone to ask you what, Dennis, what is your question?
I have a bathroom exhaust fan that has died.
Okay.
And the builder, I'm sure, framed it in on construction, and it's drywalled tight around that frame. A replacement by the same manufacturer, I tried to take out the motor, it doesn't match up, and without starting to hack into drywall and make this a huge project,
yeah.
Troubleshooting, what do you think my options are for a 10 1/4 by 10 1/4 opening to try to replace this master bath exhaust fan?
Well, let me ask you this question. Do you have any access from up above? Is there any way into an attic space or not?
Yeah, it'd be a ways away. That's what I was trying to do
sure.
without having to do that. But
yeah.
I'm afraid if you tell me that's the only way, then I guess that's what we're going to do.
Well, here's where I'm so cavalier now about drywall repair. We do this, fix it in a day, and in 24 hours we're painting it. So I just don't even think about that being a problem anymore. And I know for the typical home and do-it-yourselfer, it's a much, much different scenario. But in my mind, yeah, I'm cutting out a 24-by-24-inch space, giving myself access and replacing it with a new fan.
And that's easy for you as a general contractor. Yep. I have trouble getting the drywaller to come out and
sure.
say, I have a 24-by-24
right.
space. And they go, nah, not worth my time.
Right.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah,
that's
no, you're absolutely right. And you raise a really, really good point. Most folks, we have a company that we work with all the time, and they say, we don't care what the size of the job is. It's $1,200 no matter what for us to come out and do work for you.
Oh, that's it.
They won't do anything for less than $1,200, no matter how small it is. That's their now new minimum fee. That's their minimum. Yeah, they won't work for less than that. And what this caller is describing is a huge, huge issue where if you know how to do drywall, this is easy. If you don't know how to do drywall, this is a pain in the behind, and then you can make things really ugly in the process. Mm. And the problem, of course, is to get that space out, you pull the motor. That thing is screwed in to the framing. You can pull the screws out. But then to drop the fan, you need to find something that's exactly the same size or one where the cover of the new fan still covers your drywall seam. Now, that might be doable, but you're going to have to research all the different brands of fans to find an exact match and an exact fit. So while it's possible to do that, in my mind, that's the more difficult option rather than repair the drywall.
Wow.
Now, in this situation, if you're not going to handle the drywall, you don't want to be up in the attic, you just need to research and research and research until you find a fan housing that matches the same and replace it. But those will be screwed from the inside, not the outside.
Okay.
So you pull the cover off, pull the motor out, and you'll have access to the screws, and that'll allow you to remove the fan.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I wish
good luck.
Good luck is right, Dennis. Thanks for the call. Texter says, looking to tear down an old single-car garage in southeast Minneapolis. Want to rebuild with the living area above. Is that possible in a small Minneapolis lot? And how would that show up on a listing if we sell in the future? Would it just be counted as another bedroom and bathroom?
That's a good question. And my assumption is that you're in a place that's zoned R1, which means you can't put a living space in a detached assembly. So you would have to have a different zoning regulation. And if you go to the city and ask for a zoning variance, they will flatly refuse you in every case. They just don't want to create that scenario. And people do actually create living spaces above their garages, not legally, not with city permission, not with approval. So please, before you jump into a build of a garage with that intention, make sure you contact the city and understand what's legal and what's not for your area, because in my experience, that won't be an option that the city will permit, and therefore you've got issues with plumbing, electrical, waste, all of those kinds of things that if you're going to actually turn into a living space, you would need, And you can't legally do those things. So important to understand the options. My kids have often told me they want me to build a garage so that they can live in the detached garage. You just can't do it. I live in Minneapolis, too, and I've been paying attention to these rules for a long time because I'm looking at the options myself.
Someone, in fact, we're getting a couple of text messages. In this case, these are realtors that want to take your classes.
Oh, well, great. ProEdResource.com. Or you can Google Barry Strands, and I'm at Barry Strands. .com, and that there's a link that takes you right over to the place where I teach.
And what was the first
Pro Ed Resource, all one word.
Pro Ed Resource.
Pro Ed Resource. We're just working on classes starting in 2019, and I don't know if I have anything scheduled for teaching in the end of the year, but I'm always, you know, thrilled. My style of teaching is try to be – it's infotainment, Danny. If people aren't entertained, they can't – and if you don't find yourself amused while you learn, it's just – it's boring. I don't want to be boring. I had a friend of mine who's taken my classes for years, went to another class where I used to teach, and he sent me a copy, a photocopy of the evaluation. Please find Barry Strands and bring him back. And that's – you know, I really appreciate that. Unfortunately, that didn't work out with that company.
There's no sleeping in your class.
Well, it's not permitted. No, I yell at people. It's like, hey, hey, you know.
All right.
Take a nap on your time.
You want to send a text to Barry, 81807. Let's see. Okay, I guess we got a few more that popped in here besides the taking classes. Let me back up here. I don't want to forget somebody who texted in earlier. All right. I live in Falcon Heights, 1939 built home, 1.5 story. What do you recommend for roof insulation? I have ice dam issues.
Yeah. I've written actually a 6-page treatment on ice dams to try to explain the problems relative to 1.5 story homes. So they're a specific issue. And my first choice is to create access in that rafter assembly of the roof and spray foam the entire thing so that you create what is called a hot roof, which means it's not ventilated. The current rules of code permit it. Up until the last code change before 2015, you couldn't do it. Not legally, without permission from the city's building official. Today, now the city has to approve it if you meet the code requirements for the installation. Closed-cell polyurethane spray foam in that cavity of the 2x4 typically rafter member, and then drywall finish, and you're good to go. And that's a much, much better assembly. What happens
that's a
is,
hot roof. Huh?
It's a hot roof. So you have knee walls that create living space, and then you have these spaces beyond the knee wall. Knee walls are typically 3.5, 4.5 feet tall, and they create this vaulted ceiling space at the top of the 1.5 story home. But now from that knee wall beyond, there's typically an access door to storage, and you can put luggage in there, and you can put various things. The problem is that space is cold. So now you've got a cold space and a heated space in conjunction. So the little door in between is supposed to be like an exterior door with weather stripping and stuff. Well, we never do that. We just put a little plywood thing in there with some kind of handle. So now we're bleeding warm, moist air from our heated space back into the under area of the roof, which is now cold. And what happens, of course, is we then heat that roof surface. And when snow is on that surface, the heat escaping from the house hits that surface, melts off, and now we have massive ice dam issues. It's just an untenable design. And so we have to change the what's called the thermal plane. We have to change the location at which the heat is contained inside the home and resisted from exhausting up to the roof surface. And the best way to do that is to have the entire rafter assembly foamed. But the problem is, typically, someone's already got drywall on that living space that's finished, and you can't foam without creating access. And you need access to every cavity or you have a compromised installation. And because of that, now people are pulling drywall off. And again, in my world, drywall's not a big deal. It's like, well, take the drywall off. But now you're probably going to have some type of insulation up there. Maybe it's blown in. And that's messy. It's a messy way to do what I'm suggesting. It's also the right way and the thorough way to do it.
Yeah.
But it's also the messy way to do it. So we compromise this all the time and then try to make our problems go away. And the problems just don't go away. Because we have breaches in our vapor retardant and heat barrier installations that do not allow us to have the designs that we were hoping for.
All right. Tell you what, Barry, we got to take a quick break here. 651-989-9226. We have callers. We have texters. That text number, 81807. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our Home Improvement Show brought to us by Linda's Construction. I don't think I spelled it yet, L-I-N-D-U-S.
And we love those guys, by the way. Hate to break in on you, but they're terrific.
You know they are. And that's Barry Strands filling in for Andy today. Yeah, they are great, great folks. Kevin and Emily are kind of letting the boys take control.
Yeah, just kind of monitoring now from a distance and making sure they follow the same integrity standards that they set.
Still family-run business. 1-800-LEAF-GUARD if you want to get in touch. All right, let's see. We don't want to leave anybody out in the cold. As far as their questions, how hard is it to put in a battery backup for a sump pump? How hard is it to put in a battery backup sump pump? I don't have the battery backup in my house. I have a sump
pump. I've never done that, and I've had several people tell me that you can go down to some kind of industrial place and buy them, and then they plug into an outlet. That charges the battery. The battery then is what going to you plug in your sump pump, and it's simple, simple, simple. That's my understanding.
I've never done it. Andy Lindis has one.
Yeah, no, I think that's just as easy as can be.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Let's see. Old plastic shower with glass door with metal frame, lots of black stuff on it. Is that mold?
Probably
mold.
Hard to know for sure, but you know what? If you hit it with a bleach and water solution, five parts water, one part bleach, and watch it disappear, that's a pretty good indication it's mold.
You get the chance, Barry, to see, like you started the show, talking about some neat things at the homes that you see being built. What are they doing in bathrooms these days besides the steam shower?
Well, I think that the niches for built-ins is one of the cool things. And then always there's a place to put a leg up. So I don't shave my legs, but I have people in my life who do with eight daughters and a wife, you know. So having a place that actually makes sense so that your foot is there. The steam shower is a cool idea. But the multi-jets, there are people who love the rainhead shower, but that's, you know, one person.
Yeah.
But what we have, of course, is the option now to have multiple jetted surfaces. I've only done a couple of these. But you can have vertical jet surfaces either built into the wall itself or mounted on stainless steel surface or chrome surface on the face where you're getting hit with water basically from everything but the door up to the shower itself. So you are in a complete body wash. It's kind of like the idea of walking in to your own personal car wash for the body.
I was going to say, it reminds me of a car wash.
Yeah, and very, very cool. Kohler came out with something called the Habitat years ago, and it basically was its own standalone steam, heat, mist space that you could sit in for an hour and just kind of do your meditation, put in incense and smell good stuff, and then sit there. And it would run you through this cycle of gentle wind, hot breeze, and then spring rain, and just enjoy a completely other kind of encounter. And those are still available and fun. So we'll see saunas and steam showers and those kinds of things as part of now the new normal for higher-end houses.
They're cool. That.
But they're getting bigger. And then curbless, which means you can drive a chair in right into the shower space. That creates a whole new thing. Then, of course, water heating lines inside those spaces and then on a timer so that you run in and the walls of your shower and the floors of are warm. It's like walking into a toaster with no fear of being shocked.
Wow.
Yeah, very cool stuff.
How neat. All right, let's see. We've got a ton of text messages, too, I don't want to forget about. My concern, let's see. My brother bought a cabin last fall. It has a tankless water heater. When taking a shower, the temperature fluctuates between hot and cold without touches. My question, without a faucet handle. He has replaced the mixing valve, but the problem persists. What is happening? I've never had one of those in my house.
Well, the check has got to be on the flow rate and the capacity for these to make sure you can handle showers. The smaller tanklesses won't keep up, and then you end up with a spotty temperature like you're experiencing. That's my guess as to what's going on. Without knowing the unit, the size, capacity, and the water flow, can't be sure. Now, sometimes someone will do a tankless, and then because they want more water flow, they'll pull the little suppressor plug out of the shower head. And by changing, it's called a flow restrictor. Changing that, they change the flow coming through the system, and now they've made the system unable to keep up. That flow restrictor's got to stay in whenever you go to a tankless design.
Interesting. That makes sense. Let's see. My question is, concerns a vapor barrier. Is it needed in a garage? Do I need to run plastic between each joist?
If the garage is heated, it's treated like a interior frame space or a wall. I should say an exterior wall space of the rest of the house. If the garage is not heated, then no. Now, by code, technically speaking, a garage is not under energy code. There are no energy code rules for it. And I don't like plastic on the inside of surfaces as a general rule. I much prefer insulation materials that solve the problem. So I don't like the idea of putting plastic in between studs or cross faces of studs in the garage. However, if we're heating and ventilating the garage, it can work just fine.
Texas says, have old lake building, thinking of tearing it down. Can you get asbestos inspection without tearing walls and ceiling apart?
Well, an asbestos inspection is going to have access to the area where we have or suspect the asbestos material. Typically, if it's an attic blown-in insulation and you have an attic access panel, that's all you're going to need. You don't need to tear into anything. You use the access panel. However, if there's no access panel and if there's no other – if we suspect that we have asbestos, then you'd have to have a way to get to it to verify. And today, obviously, you can use a little camera for inspection purposes, but you still have to have access to the space to see it. And if you open up a hole, that is, especially if it's vermiculite, a pour-in insulation like a vermiculite that is, you know, asbestos-laden, you are going to risk, by putting a hole into the bottom of the wall, the whole thing coming out like sand in an hourglass. It'll all flow out. But at the top of the wall, you can come and check. Probably it's settled anyway, and you won't be able to do anything but run a camera down into the hole you create to verify what you've got for material. They're easily plugged and patched, but you'd have to have some access. So you don't have to tear into everything, but you have to have access to see what you've got.
We have less than a minute to go. Do you ever see or deal with any solar issues in your work?
Well, we haven't done solar panels that are part of a photovoltaic system. I know that they're available and they're out there. None of our consumers have used it since I've been with the company. I know that Tesla makes a really cool roof shingle that's designed to create an absorption so that they can then power the car. However, the issues with solar go on and on. There's passive, there's active, there's storage tanks, and I'm familiar with many of those kinds of things. But until we get a more specific question, tough to answer it very well.
Barry, you come back again, will you?
I want to, sir. Yeah, Look forward to it.
I know you will. And again, if you want to get in touch with Linda's Construction, the easiest way is to call that toll-free number we tell you about all the time. That's 1-800-LEAFGUARD. Thanks, Barry. See you down the road.